Awesome. Well, Representative Blumenauer, thank you so much for speaking with me.
It's great to visit with you today.
For KBOO Evening News, I'm Althea Billings.
And the time is nearly 6 o'clock, rather. This is KBOO Portland. Coming up is Labor Radio, but first this.
KBOO is getting ready for our annual book and record sale.
This is a great time to clean out those closets and shelves and turn your old books, records, and CDs into cash for community radio.
Bring them to KBOO Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. till 7 p.m.
We are accepting donations of books, vinyl records, CDs, and DVDs through Saturday, December 14th. The sale will be held on December 21st. Stay tuned for details.
Your unwanted books, records, and DVDs are treasure to someone else. Help them find new homes while raising money for our community radio station, KBOO.
If you have questions or want to arrange for a pickup of donations, please email volunteer@kboo.org or call 503-231-8032, extension 213.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio on KBOO Community Radio. Of the working class, for the working class, by the working class. I'm Amanda Hill, and here with my co-host, Jamie Partridge. Good evening, Jamie.
Hey, Amanda.
Can't hear anything. We are joined live in the studio by Gabriela Saldana Lopez of Bus Riders Unite, Up With Riders, and Opal, Organizing People, Activating Leadership, an environmental justice organization. Welcome, Gabriela.
Thank you.
Also here is Andrew Riley of Unite Oregon, a unified intercultural movement for justice. He is a former Amalgamated Transit Union rep. ATU 757 represents TriMet drivers. Andrew is also a current member of Bus Riders Unite. Welcome, Andrew.
Thank you.
So, the transit equity. Hey, that's the topic for tonight. Big topic of conversation in Portland metro area. Since TriMet announced an increase in fare inspectors and a crackdown on riders who fail to pay. So TriMet has stated that this is in direct response to rider concerns. Please tell us your perspectives, Andrew, Gabriela, your views on this latest move by TriMet. We'll start with you, Gabriela.
Yeah, so it's frankly very disappointing to hear that TriMet put that out there first, just to begin with, an ad kind of campaign that was shaming folks for not paying their fare, and kind of just promoting this culture of like blaming poor folks. And with that, you know, and when it comes to transit equity, I think Opal in general has been working on this issue for very many years. And so it's just really funny to hear that TriMet kind of created this ad campaign in response to rider concerns, because we've also heard from a lot of people that they don't really care, you know, if people pay or not, because there's many reasons why someone wouldn't pay a fare, right?
Give us an example of what it says said on some of these ads.
Yeah, so some of these ads were like, you know, don't be like that guy who, you know, doesn't pitch in for pizza and doesn't help move or something like that, or doesn't pitch in for drinks. Kind of assuming that, like, when you know, make that correlation between, like, transportation and, like, drinks, like, that's not really an even comparison. Like, drinks is optional, whereas transportation is not.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of assuming that folks have an option of their transportation, and TriMet does have that view that people are customers, that people have the option to opt in, and some folks really don't. Like, people don't have that option. There are people who are choice riders that can choose between driving and can choose to ride the bus, right? But in terms of what service you get for public transportation, there's not very many options, even very limited within, like, multimodal transportation, like, you know, Nike bikes don't even go past 82nd. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. Lime scooters are the only things that really go. Like, there's, it's a larger conversation, but it's kind of just assuming that we have this choice, and really we don't. For a lot of people, it's not a choice. Mm-hmm. And so it's just, you know, really, really disappointing at best to say that these ads were out there and kind of just promoting this, like, snitching kind of thing. Yeah. You know, there was kind of a similar ad campaign in New York, and people, like, had guerrilla campaigns that looked like just like them, to be like, don't snitch, like, swipe for someone else. But with the Hop Pass, you can't really do that, mm-hmm. right? It's creating a lot of kind of disparities, and I've just heard from a lot of people that even the Hop Pass isn't very equitable, you know? Like, this just furthers the inequity and further criminalizes folks for just being low income or being brown and black folks, you know, people mm-hmm. of color.
Exactly. Andrew?
Yeah, so to follow up on that, I think it's important to put this in context, right? This is, the way that TriMet has tried to spin this, as Gabby is saying, is as responsive to rider concerns. And it's not. That is mm-hmm. transparently false. And in fact, a reporter for OPB, Ryan Haas, put out a public records request to TriMet to see how many complaints they had gotten about fare evasion. It was 8.
Yeah.
8. You can count mm-hmm. that on 2 hands, right? Yeah. This is not in response to rider concerns, but it's part of a longer context where TriMet has moved towards militarization of transit, towards a more closed system, and to raising fares. They have moved away from more of an open system that we've had. I think folks probably remember that we used to have Fareless Square in Portland for about 37 years, 1975 to 2010, and then they decided to change it a little bit to the free rail zone and then to scale it back entirely. And then that coincides with, in 2014, the hiring of the G4S security agents who are on TriMet. They're the ones who wear the yellow vests that you can see.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They don't really mm-hmm. have any actual authority to stop you, detain you, or enforce fares, but they're supposed to be there and look imposing. We have seen the agency put in millions and millions of dollars to the Transit Police Division, which is this interagency task force of cops from all over the Portland metro area, from West Lynn out to Beaverton, Hillsborough, what have you, who get essentially put in Portland Police cruisers and with Portland Police equipment as the Transit Police, who come in and help with these fare enforcers.
Are they armed?
They are. Transit police are armed. Mm-hmm. Well, and then TriMet is also adding a third class of security agent, what they're calling transit peace officers, or TPOs. And they, as envisioned, are currently unarmed. But the state law would allow them to be armed as well if TriMet decided they wanted to give these folks guns. What they're doing is they're contracting, or they've discussed contracting, with a company called Portland Patrol, Inc., which is a lot of retired police, off-duty police, retired military, has a lot of close ties to the Portland Business Alliance and the Clean and Safe District downtown. They will be deputized as transit peace officers, who will be another unarmed security presence on the bus or on the train. It's all part of this broader move to a more criminalized, more enforced, more regulated system rather than one that actually serves people. And I think part of that is that you've seen a lot of TriMet executives who have come in who don't have a substantial experience with public transit. Doug Kelsey is a really good example, general manager of the agency. His background is he worked as a Shell Oil executive in Canada for 11 years, worked for the oil industry, worked for Starbucks Canada, kind of lucked his way into running charter buses for the Olympics in Vancouver, and then reinvented himself as a transit expert, and has arrived in Portland to inflict his top-down corporate vision of transit on all of us.
Wow. Mm. So mm-hmm. corporatizing TriMet.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. As Gabby says, right, turning folks yeah. from riders into customers.
Perfect. So OPAL has a long history of being involved in the struggle for better service, lower fares, and less enforcement. Would you expand on those struggles over the past years?
Yeah. So just to kind of close in, the last idea is that if TriMet was really listening to customers, they would have listened years ago and expanded services instead of proposing, you know, a fare hike that they want to start in 2020, instead of putting money into militarizing the system, plus like the new police facility that's like next to the Moda Center. Like, that was also something that people were fighting against, and they didn't listen. It's still there. They're still investing these dollars. And I think that says that they just really care about getting that money, right? Like, they don't really care about us as people, and even like in the terms with customer, like they see as you know, a someone who pays them.
Transaction.
Yeah, transaction. And so with the long history, like, I've had the fortune of kind of like inheriting this work, you know, like, this is years and years of community investment, and like, you know, because they invest because they depend on this lifeline, right? Like, it's not really an option for a lot of folks. And so being in my current role, like, seeing it go from, you know, us fighting for transfer. There you mm-hmm. go. A 3-hour transfer. They gave us $250, right? We've, you know, worked for them kind of to create like a low income fair program, and we gave it to them, and they kind of gave us something, right? And also in addition, like with Youth Pass, you know, we wanted it for all East County schools, and they only gave it to Park Rose, David Douglas, and I think Reynolds, but very, very low amounts, right? They're not fully covered. It's just for students that are considered low income. And if we know anything about the schools, is that most of the students are low income, and their needs are not fully met as it stands. And right now, like, Park Rose is, you know, going to run out of funding sometime early next year. And so if we want to keep people, you know, going to where they need to go, like, either that's school or that's work, we need to reinvest not just in like stopping this fare hike, but also improving the services, because people need to opt in and needs to be something that is accessible. You know, waiting more than 15 minutes for a bus is just not going to do it. It's not going to do it for folks. They're not going to leave their cars, or they're just going to have to pay higher rates, like with Lyft or Uber, right? And not everybody has that money to spend on something exactly. like that.
So, Andrew, in your past role with the ATU, the Amalgamated Transit Union, Local 757, what strategies did the union use to hold TriMet to its values, which apparently are this on the website?
Yes.
Safety, inclusivity, equity, and community teamwork.
That's a great question, and I would say that the answer is that we fought. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you a little bit of a story that was a kind of a joke among the operators I worked with, but is a true story. Has the benefit of being funny and true. So there's a bus garage at 98th and Powell, Powell Garage, and as folks pulled out of there for years, the last sign that they saw when they pulled their bus out for their shift was a sign that says, "Remember that safety is our number one value," right? It's a kind of kitschy thing you see in any office, but it's a reminder of what TriMet really values. A few years ago, that sign was removed. And in fact, I think it may be in the office of President Shirley Block with ATU, because TriMet didn't have a use for it anymore. And instead, the last sign you see, sorry, I'm not snitching on Shirley. Everybody knows she has it. just to be clear. But the last sign you see when you pull out a Powell now is a sign that says, "Remember to be on time." That's it. So they've gone, yep. So from safety to what they call OTP, or on-time performance, that's the mantra at TriMet right now.
Sounds OTP. Like medical care.
Yeah. and it's even more laughable, because the operators, the schedulers, the folks who are driving and drawing the schedules are not given enough flexibility by management to develop schedules that works, right? Anyone who hears TriMet talk about on-time performance and rides it or works for it knows that that's a joke. So we had to fight a lot. You know, a lot of it was training workers on what's actually safe. A few years ago, when there was a major heat wave, some of our folks were being forced to work in some pretty unsafe conditions. For folks who don't know a lot about the transit industry, every night your bus gets cleaned by someone called a shagger. They come in, they do some cleaning, they vacuum it out. And for some reason, in TriMet policy, shaggers are not allowed to wear shorts. But when it's a hot day out, and when you've got a bus that's sitting in the middle of an asphalt lot idling next to another bus in the middle of an asphalt lot that's idling, it gets pretty dang hot, right? But the problem is they were not being given their extra breaks. They were not being given the rights that they have for working in heat to be safe. Folks were just being told to power through. So we had to do a lot of training of workers on what was actually safe. And I imagine the folks listening to Labor Radio know about this, but if you don't, your protected right to refuse unsafe work under the Occupational Safety and Health Act. Had to teach a lot of folks how to invoke their right to refuse unsafe work, because they were being asked to do stuff that was not within the normal bounds of their job. Yeah.
So it sounds like TriMet's not really standing up to their values.
I think that's pretty fair to say, yeah. It's you know, the management at that agency, most of them have not worked at TriMet for very long. Most of them are not from the Portland metro area. They don't have the long-term investment in this agency that a lot of folks do. And I think the only way that we've gotten progress is by workers and community members, riders coming together to fight. You know, working to change the agency's culture, working to hold them accountable in the media and in public.
Yeah. So with TriMet, I know that TriMet drivers and employees can use transit for no cost and no fare. Mm-hmm. have you heard of other, is that a union contract thing or is that a TriMet give?
I believe it's a TriMet give. I'm actually not 100% sure.
I'm just wondering if you've heard of unions actually trying to bargain for passes in their collective bargaining contracts. Like city employees would come to mind because you know they're really in the core of the city. Metro employees, et cetera. That it would be maybe something that y'all would want to partner with some unions to work on as well.
Yeah, I believe that it's not just a TriMet give. I think it's a negotiation between the agency or the company and TriMet. I think TriMet's pretty notorious for not wanting to pay everything outright, so they definitely look for ways to get things covered, if that makes sense. So I would think that if Metro gives out passes, it's because Metro puts in some of the money to get those passes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. If you've just tuned in, this is KBOO Portland. You're listening to Labor Radio, and our guests tonight are Gabriela Saldana Lopez of Bus Riders Unite and Opal, and as well we have Andrew Riley of Unite Oregon, formerly with the Amalgamated Transit Union. So can we talk about what kind of relationship Opal and Unite Oregon currently have with local labor unions, especially the TriMet Drivers Union, the ATU 757?
Yeah, so I would say that, speaking for Unite Oregon, I think we have a generally pretty good relationship with organized labor as a whole. We do a lot of shared work with, for example, SEIU 49 on housing issues, and we have a couple of organizers based in Medford and Southern Oregon who are really active in the Southern Oregon Strong Voice chapter with the AFL. So they're constantly on the picket line, constantly working in solidarity with workers, in large part because, you know, we work largely with immigrants and refugees who are workers, and many union members are, in fact, immigrants and refugees. And you can't tease those struggles apart, right? Okay. Those are linked struggles. And so I think that understanding has informed our relationship. I think Unite's got a generally pretty good relationship with ATU Local 757. I did used to work there and still have a lot of love for the union and union leadership. We don't work with them all that directly on issues, but I think we have a lot of alignment on transit and really wanting the transit system to work for ordinary folks, that is workers and riders, and not the suits who currently run it.
Okay. Gabriela?
Yeah, I would say that Opal also has a pretty good relationship with labor unions, and specifically when we talk about ATU, because there was like a transition between, you know, the past organizer and me, like the new organizer, we're still like, I'm still building out those relationships with ATU, but we really do want to support them. Like right now, I believe they're still in contract negotiations, mm-hmm. so that's still something that we want to support and have been in conversations like, okay, how can we, you know, we move towards a more equitable, you know, transportation system without costing, you know, labor jobs. And that's something that really matters to us, and why we, you know, the reasons why we do certain things is to have that in mind. You know, our moves or any kind of thing, like we want to consider those relationships. And so we just want to build like a stronger relationship with ATU and like uplift, you know, the fact that they're not always in the best working conditions, and TriMet as a whole is not really respecting them as workers.
Absolutely.
If I could throw in something about that current contract campaign, and this is a message I think I would have for anyone who rides the bus or Max, I want to see you stand with ATU 757. So one of the things going on in their contract negotiation right now that's been a feature of previous negotiations is that the agency wants to do away with the apprenticeship program. So the way it works at TriMet is this is an incredible pipeline for working class folks who don't have college degrees to get really well-paying jobs in maintenance. So you come on board, you work as a service worker, you clean platforms, you clean shops, you do the grunt work for decent but not great pay. But doing that gives you the chance to get into an internship, or sorry, into an apprenticeship. Mm-hmm. When you pass through certain qualification tests and all that, you go straight from service worker to apprentice, which then gets you into the pipeline for a maintenance position, which are very well-paid jobs because they are hard, they are unsafe, they are grueling. And that I've seen this service worker program be an incredible way for folks who might not otherwise have access to jobs that pay very good wages and with great benefits to actually do that. But TriMet wants to do away with that. They want to start hiring their mechanics from off the street rather than have them go through the system. That is, I think, terrible from a worker's rights perspective and from an institutional knowledge perspective, right? I want the person working on my bus to be someone who's worked their way up through the agency, who knows the ins and outs, who knows the system, who knows Portland, right? No offense to any mechanic we could hire off the street, but it is not the same as going through that apprenticeship.
And how can people support them? How can they show that support?
Please write letters to the TriMet Board of Directors, call them, send emails, show up at board meetings, which take place once a month.
Buttons or?
That I don't know. I would definitely check with AT Local 757, but they are being really mistreated at a time that TriMet is also saying that they want to start fresh after some really tense years of labor negotiations. So please stand with ATU.
Definitely. So there are currently a few cities in the U.S. and more internationally that offer fare-free transit. Andrew, you recently published an article in Medium that talks about this. Would you expand on that further? And what types of funding are involved in these fare-free transit systems?
Yeah, and so I want to comment first that I'm really glad you caught yourself and said fare-free, because mm-hmm. I will never use the term free transit, because that's not what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. We're still going to have to pay for it. It's just free at the fare box. And I'll start kind of philosophical, because to me it's not about dollars and cents or about whether this pencils out or not. It's about the principle of the thing, right? Public transit is good, and what I mean by that is it is both a social good, and when it works well, it gives people mobility, gives folks the chance to access their community, to access other communities. Public transit is a really good thing. And it's collective, right? Not like Uber and Lyft where you're in a single occupancy vehicle driving around. It is a collective form of transportation. It only really works when people ride it. You know, empty buses don't do anyone a lot of good. One of the best ways to get people to ride transit is to lower fares. We know this. It's if something is cheaper, folks are more likely to use it, right? And I'm going to go out on a limb and say you probably can't get cheaper at the fare box than $0.00, right? That's about the best you're going to be able to do. So that's where that's kind of where I come to this conversation, right? Philosophically, fare-free transit is the right thing to do, and the question is how do we do it? It's not new in the world, in the U.S., or even in Oregon. We already have two fare-free systems in Oregon, Corvallis City Transit and Wilsonville's SMART, stands for South Metro Area Rapid Transit. They have slightly different models. In Corvallis, the way it works is you pay a monthly fee on your water bill. It's called your transit operations fee. And they went fare-free in 2011. So every month you pay between $2 and $10, and you get to ride the bus for free. In Wilsonville, it's a little bit different, where they have a couple of premium routes that go to other cities. But if you're staying in the city, it's free, paid for by an employer payroll tax. Those are decent models. There's other places in the world. Tallinn, Estonia is a really notable example. They have fare-free transit for city residents. If you're a tourist or coming from another city in Estonia, you would need to pay. So it's not a fully fare-free system, but it is fare-free for residents. So those are all the kind of comparative examples. But the number that's really important is $110 million. That is the amount that TriMet brings in every year in fares. It's about 16 or 17% of its revenue. It's not the lion's share of how they make their money, but it's a pretty big chunk. $110 million is not a small amount of money. But that's the amount we would need to aim for to fund fare-free transit. TriMet also has a whole bunch of other ways to raise revenue than they currently use. So TriMet has the inherent legal authority right now, today, maybe a little late in the day for this, but today, to pass an income tax. TriMet has the authority to pass an income tax. They can pass business license fees. They've got the employer payroll tax, and they've got the employee payroll tax, which I would call a wage tax. They've got property taxes. They've got all of these different funding mechanisms that can get us towards that $110 million. The other thing that's really important is that fares cost money, right, to the agency. You can think about when you go to a MAC station, there's a ticket vending machine that's there. So that ticket vending machine costs money to install, to operate, and to maintain. The tickets you're actually buying out of it are the new, hop card enabled tap tickets. those cost TriMet 20 cents a pop, wholesale. That's what they're paying. 20 cents of your fare is going to that ticket cost alone. You pay a mechanic to service that machine. You have to pay for parts. Maybe you can't get the parts machine, so you've got to do it in-house, right? That's just the ticket vending machine. You've got a financial cost to fare enforcement, to fare inspectors, transit police, G4S security, these new transit peace officers. That costs money. You've got a $12 million transit jail. That costs quite a bit of money, right? So fares are not, you know, fares are not just revenue coming in. There are costs to the agency to implement an exclusionary fare-based system. And so moving away from fares would also save us money in that sense. And so the number we have to reach is $110 million. I don't actually think it's that hard.
Doesn't sound like it when you bring up all of the ways that we can raise that money. Gabriella, fare-free transit would contribute in non-economical ways as well. It's kinder to the environment also. Your organization, Opal, that's one of the things that they stand for, is the environment. How are your campaigns addressing the positive environmental impact that this could have?
Yeah, I would say, you know, I feel like the same as Andrew. Like when Andrew said, it's like an empty bus doesn't do anyone any good, is very, very true. What we want to see is more buses with more people on them. And so one of the ways that, you know, it's improving environmental, not just like environmentalism, but like environmental justice in general, is if we have more buses on the street, there's less cars. Like less cars, I think what people don't understand is that less cars helps with congestion, so their commute is going to be easier. Like people think like, oh, more buses, that's like more annoying, you know, whatever. Like people have their feelings. And so with kind of these projects, like the Roselane projects, is going to be really interesting to see, because it's just a pilot right now, but like investing in more infrastructure that, you know, promotes like a reliable form of transportation is going to long-term impact the environment with less diesel emissions. Like right now there's like a big statistic how like transportation is one of the biggest emitters of carbon, but in reality I think public transportation is a much smaller fraction of that, and a much bigger fraction is like airplanes and trains and single occupancy cars. Those are way more you know, contributing to carbon emissions than a public bus.
So circling back to your organizations, how are we going to make this happen? What are you doing to organize and mobilize your members for, to put pressure, to turn up the heat on the institutions that need to be moved? Either one of you want to start?
Sure, yeah. I, along with other folks, get on buses. We talk to people. We get them to commit to come to a meeting. They're every fourth Thursday of the month for BRU general meetings.
Where are they?
They're usually kind of sporadic. A lot of times they're at Orchard's Vetti Second, so right next on 82nd and Division. We also have meetings on Friday where it's, we call them a joint meeting, which is like strategy and action planning. And so those are every first and third Fridays. They're always at from 6 to 8. There's always food, always ability to get interpretation and childcare. You know, just let us know, because we want them to be accessible, because we know that everyone, you know, can, you know, get food before, you know, there's a lot of reasons. And one of the things that we're really leading up to is a board of directors meeting on December 11th. So we're going to have a rally at 8 a.m. I know, super early, but we really want people to get together and tell the board of directors of TriMet to not propose this fare hike. We don't want transportation to cost even more, because as we see it now, you know, TriMet's ridership is declining, and if you increase it by any amount, like the ridership is going to go down. Like that's just a fact.
December 11th, 8 a.m. in the morning. Where?
At the World Trade Center
World
in
Trade
downtown.
Center, downtown. Yeah. 121 Southwest Main.
So, and we're running out of time, and I did want to bring up that there's a rally on Black Friday, November 29th from 12 to 3 at the Pioneer Courthouse Square. It's called the Rally for No Fare. Are your organizations involved in that?
We're not, but I'm definitely going to be there and absolutely support it.
Okay.
Great.
And mm-hmm. how can we contact your organizations?
For Unite, check us out at uniteoregon.org. If you're passionate about transit, I would pitch also joining Opal. and also, please feel free to reach out to me, andrew@uniteoregon.org.
Yeah, and same here, opalpdx.org, I believe. And if not, email me at Gabriela, G-A-B-R-I-E-L-A, with one L, at opalpdx.org.
Great.
That wraps it up for tonight's Labor Radio. This Monday, every Monday, 6 to 6:30. And thanks to our engineer. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
I've never been one to take a handout. I still have too much pride to stand on an intersection or a corner or a driveway with a sign and ask somebody to help me.
Meet Amy, a homeless person in Corvallis, Oregon. To hear more about her life and what it's like to be homeless, come on over to Local Folks Podcast, Helping the Homeless, for episode 2. You can find Local Folks at kboo.fm. Go to audio, podcasts, and click on Local Folks.
Baby, you understand me now.